tuned in to Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service Radio.
Five, baby. See us at a five.
What is this show?
Are you kidding, man? The Price is Right. This is the All-American Game Show.
And they're supposed to guess what all that crap is worth? I mean, is that the principle?
Yeah, right.
Uh-huh.
Now you got three left.
How long has this show been on the air?
Since about 1911. Hey, I can't believe you never heard of The Price is Right.
Well, I don't see that much television. I'm out of the country a lot.
Really? What do you do?
I work for the CIA.
I can't believe you work for the CIA.
Why not?
I don't know. I mean, you know, I thought like James Bond.
Oh, no, they all look like me. I'm the classic agency type. Muscular, low to the ground, compact. Are you interested in joining? I'll tell you, the benefits are fantastic. The trick is not to get killed. That's really the key to the benefit program.
And welcome once again to the Sun Cinema Podcast, a weekly radio show that examines the highs and lows of the medium of film through the filtered lens of Washington, D.C.'s only art house cinema. I am your host, Jason Cauley, and I'm joined by my co-host, David Cabrera. Today, Ryan Hunter Mitchell is absent.
Ryan's in California.
In L.A.,
for a wedding, right?
That's exactly right. He's flying back today. But
that's beautiful.
That's a long flight.
It's a long flight.
West to East Coast, that's a hump.
So in his stead, we have a special guest today.
Hello. Friend of the podcast.
Friend of the podcast. Listens to every one of our podcasts.
Oh, religiously. What an honor to be here. My name is Brittany Carney.
So Brittany
I'm
Carney.
Happy to be here in Ryan's stead. How am I holding up so far?
You're doing well. Better than Ryan.
Yeah, or any of us. So Brittany is a comedian and a historian. And she is one of the founders of a show that we do at Sun Cinema called Fail University. So we are going to talk about comedy in a bit.
Yeah, we've got a pretty good lineup today. Actually, got a little RIP to shout out first and foremost, and then we'll get started. We're going to talk about the new Criterion Channel today, and also it is April Fool's Month at Sun Cinema, meaning it's nothing but comedies all lined up for the month of April. And we'll talk about some of the movies that made it, that didn't make it, why they didn't make it, and we'll see how many of these movies Brittany knows. What you heard on the intro was actually tied to the Criterion Channel, which we'll talk about in just a second. That was Peter Falk in 1979's The In-Laws.
Yeah. It's also a comedy.
Which is also a comedy. Which is
I don't
also
know why that wasn't on the... I think it was in the... Like on the rabbit hole of things for April.
Sure. Well, and we did a private viewing of it a couple of years ago.
That's true.
At Sun Cinema.
Yeah.
And so, anyway, that was a clip from a Criterion collection called The In-Laws, 1979 Andrew Bergman film. I highly recommend it. I'll talk about it more in a little bit. But first, I must talk about Seymour Cassell, who passed away at the age of 84 yesterday.
Seymour
Cassell, maybe the best head of hair ever in the history of Hollywood. If
what
you
color?
Don't, it's blonde. But like just the thickest, like, and he was, you know, like
into his 80s.
No, he's like full head of hair in his 80s too.
Wow.
Great, obviously, but like when he was young, like super blonde, like perfect 1970s, like feathered hair, you know, like
wow.
That crazy. Perfect feather hair. Like truly Google him and yeah.
Oh, look at that mustache.
And,
don't make
and
like
a stash as well. Yeah, he carried the stash off really, really well. Seymour Cassell, if you don't know,
looks like a dad.
He looks kind of like a dad, but he's one of the coolest guys in the history of film.
Or sort of like distant but funny uncle. That's the vibe I get.
Very good.
Him.
Yeah.
But in a, you know, endearing way. I imagine I'm never, anyway, rest in peace, rest in power.
Yeah, yeah, no. But I mean, like, he played those kind of fringe type of characters, and that's kind of part of the appeal of Seymour Cassell, which is why he worked so closely with John Cassavetes. It was in five or six Cassavetes films, received an Oscar nomination in 1968 for Best Supporting Actor in Faces, John Cassavetes film, and then later became kind of a quasi-regular with Wes Anderson films, starring in Rushmore. He played the father.
Oh, right. Okay.
And in Life Aquatic, plays Bill Murray's partner who gets eaten by the tiger shark at
right.
the or not the tiger shark. The
oh, at the beginning.
The
yeah,
leopard
yeah,
shark
that's
or whatever
right.
it is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, damn.
It's a cool legacy.
What does he play in Tenenbaums? I'm reading an article that says he's in Tenenbaums.
He plays. He works as an elevator lift.
Oh yeah,
guy,
he's an elevator guy. Yeah,
and
he
comes in and pretends to be the doctor when yeah. Hackman's pretending to be sick. Yeah, no. So I mean, just a great, awesome career. You
totally.
Know?
About how long was he actively acting? Like
yeah, until like 16 to till 2016. Like started
really?
In 1959 with John Cassavetes. He was an associate producer and had a small supporting role in Cassavetes' first film, Shadows. And cut
almost
to
30 years.
Yeah, cut to 2016 and 213 I think credits on IMDb.
Wow, that's amazing.
Like a long storied career, you know?
Yeah.
And Oscar nomination and just like got to work with some of the coolest people around. So rest in peace, Seymour Cassell. We're sorry to see you go, but you certainly made an impact and had a great run.
Did a lot more than any of us did.
Yeah, so far.
And will.
And
collect no. Well, I can't really speak for either of you, but anyway. Thank you.
So there is a new thing that just happened with kind of, I don't know how this is going to work in the world of like Canopy. Obviously, what was the Filmstruck that went down? Filmstruck used to be like the place, an app, that you could watch on your television or on your laptop, whatever, telephone, that basically housed a lot of Criterion Collection films. It went under.
It was Criterion and Warner Brothers, right? Or Turner Classic
Turner
Movies.
Turner Classic Movies, yeah. And so it went under. TCM kind of went off and did their own thing, and now Criterion's going and making their own channel, basically.
My understanding is that the programming is going to be somewhat similar to the way that they did the Criterion channel on Filmstruck.
Yeah. So it's not going to be wide open.
Yeah.
Library, you can watch anything Criterion. They're gonna like cycle stuff in and out.
Oh,
okay. I'm asking.
Oh, I don't know.
I feel.
I signed up for it and I haven't been on yet. And
I've got it holding in my queue. I'm gonna sign up for it later today. But so there's like a 14-day trial if you want to try it out. Then it goes to like $11 a month. Which I just had a conversation the other night with some friends and we were like, I don't know how many people anymore that I give $12 to a month, but it's a lot of people. Like all of these, subscription services that are online or whatever, like constantly like, oh, this is $8 a month. Oh, HBO's $12 a month. Oh, this is $10 a month. And, then your Prime account, which nails you for $100 a year and, whatever.
Right. They always hit me by surprise.
Yeah, exactly. I'm never ready for the Prime and suddenly it's just like $100 gone out of my bank account. I'm like, what the hell? But anyway, it exists, the Criterion channel. So one of the things being a film podcast that we decided to do today was Dave and I were going to walk through our personal top 10 Criterion collection. Dave's got an insane collection, obviously, with Sons and everything and just his natural predilection for Criterion.
You can tell because of his hair also.
And you could, we'll get some in-studio shots.
Lost on the radio show, but
Now Dave and I like holding up the David Lynch fan club of hair.
You have a great head of hair too.
Well, thank
I'm
you.
So
I was fishing for
Brittany,
that.
You have great hair also.
You do have great hair.
Thank you.
It's we're all killing it, Jamal. We're killing it, right?
The listeners at home don't even know.
He's like,
this guy's staring at us.
You guys are still here?
Yeah, that's good hair. Anyway.
he is definitely like staring right at you. Anyways.
Yeah, okay.
So anyway, we've got we've got a rundown of our top 10.
Yeah.
I just to kind of put it into perspective, this is not in any real kind of order, right, Dave?
Yeah.
Like you're not.
Can I give a real quick, so the Criterion Collection is
please.
So is a collection of DVD Blu-rays that have been it's a huge collection of movies that have been restored from early 1900s or 20th century up to today. Art house stuff, international stuff, etc. I don't know. That gives
and even some mainstream stuff.
A lot of Wes Anderson stuff, Jim Jarmusch stuff, Kurosawa, a lot of international stuff. And also one thing to note is that part of the idea behind doing this is that the Criterion Collection often posts like famous people coming into their studio, going through their closet and picking out their top 10 favorite.
I literally just watched the Agnes Varda one yesterday.
Oh, interesting.
Which she picked out something that's on my list, which is not a surprise.
Cool. Was it one of her own movies?
No, it wasn't. Okay. But, well, sort of, actually, when you look into it. And part of the thing, I guess, to add on to what David's saying is, you know, the Criterion's really good about putting a lot of, you know, if you're a total, like, cinema geek, you're going to love it. The extras in these Blu-rays are fantastic. They're usually, you know, a couple of documentaries about making the film and interviews and
lots of essays and like huge books of things. And
you'll get
you'll
get one of these
aesthetically very pleasing to look at also. And
we actually were just talking about that. Like, you'll own stuff already on Blu-ray and then it comes out in Criterion and you're like, oh, the packaging's just so damn good. I just want to own it.
They have very, a very smart group of aesthetically inclined people.
Yeah. Doing
working for them.
Yeah, they're just, it's extremely well packaged. It's, you know, they're generally, you know, like I said, if you're a cinephile of any kind, they're generally worth the money. But I just kind of made a list of the stuff that I have, like a top 10 of the stuff I have. I went through it this morning and just kind of pulled some stuff out of my collection and wanted to talk about a few things that I think, you know, maybe the average person doesn't necessarily come across and maybe you should check it out. So I don't know how you want to do this, Dave, but we can just kind of dive in.
Yeah, you want to go first?
I'm happy to.
I feel like you put probably more thought into yours. I was so overwhelmed by this list. The Criterion Collection has like 1,000 titles, right?
Yeah, right.
And I really think that if I made this list, like started this list right after this show, it could have 10 other completely different movies. Because they're just, I couldn't narrow down a Criterion for my list.
Yeah, it's an insane amount of good stuff.
Brittany, was that good comment?
That was great. You should close this podcast with that. So in the Criterion Collection, it spans different countries, right?
It's world cinema for sure.
Cool.
It's kind of part of the appeal is that it's just great stuff from everywhere. The first thing I have actually is an American film, 1969 Michael Ritchie film called Downhill Racer, starring Robert Redford and Gene Hackman, which is just a gorgeous film about downhill skiing. And it's just the way it's shot, everything. It's one of those movies that just kind of slipped past and then people kind of rediscovered it, you know, later in the 90s and early 2000s and really kind of had a groundswell under it. But it was kind of hard to find. And then Criterion came out with Downhill Racer as an option. It was wonderful. What do you got? Give me your first one.
Oh, my first one? All right.
We'll just bounce back and forth.
I'm just going to pick one. Oh, quick. Police Story.
Police Story, great one.
Yeah, they just added it to the collection. It's just such a funny, fun action Jackie Chan early 80s.
Yeah, 85, I think, right?
85.
Yeah.
Charming, goofball, slapstick. We might show it soon.
It's so good.
That's all I got.
That's good. The next one I've got is a pretty obvious one, but I did just rewatch it like Saturday night. It's called Darjeeling Limited. Wes Anderson film from 2007. Amazing stuff. One of the like Criterion things, we watched the movie, my wife went to bed, I was still awake and just couldn't, like, not ready to go to bed, and so I like jumped onto the extras, and there's like a 20-minute documentary with like no audio really other than ambient sound and like sounds of the street
on Darjeeling Limited about it.
Yeah, and it's just like a behind the scenes straight up, because they shot it in India.
Yeah.
And it's like all this behind the scenes stuff that is just fascinating. I'm like sat there just like completely, you know, taken in by this thing for 20 minutes.
So I love Darjeeling Limited, but then every time, I'm so curious as to what you guys think, because everybody seems to poo-poo it as something that, I don't know, they don't appreciate as much as other films. But
I 100% agree.
And I relate to the most, though.
It might be. I just said this the other night to my wife. We were watching, and I said, I think Royal Tenenbaums is probably like his masterpiece thus far. But I connect to Darjeeling Limited in ways that I don't connect with on other Wes Anderson stuff. And I love Wes Anderson. We've got a clip to play from Darjeeling Limited right now, actually.
Is that Dad's razor?
Yeah.
Can I say something?
What?
You don't have permission to take his property that belongs to all of us and use it for yourself as if it's yours. Jack agrees with that, right, Jack? Plus, Dad would have hated it.
Why?
That's my opinion. I know him well.
That's a terrible thing to say.
Well, I don't mean it to be. I just don't want you to get the feeling that you're better friends with him than we are, or something weird like that. And also, you can't leave your wife just because she's pregnant. Jack agrees with that too, right, Jack?
Stop including me. I was his favorite. He told me that with blood all over him laying in the street right before he died.
How is that supposed to make us feel?
I want my passport back. Francis?
Yeah?
Here's your bell.
Stop!
What'd you do?
You don't love me!
Yes, I do!
I love you too, but I'm gonna mace you in the face! Stop!
That's amazing.
I love the pacing, the comedic pacing in the movie specifically. It also launched my eternal crush on Adrian Brody.
Oh my
I'm
god!
So attracted to him.
He's insanely beautiful,
isn't
he? Like insanely beautiful, man.
He has a very interesting face.
He's one of those guys. Like if something were like it's all kind of angles and it all just somehow like magically works. Like if one thing was off, he would be like completely hideous.
Yes.
But because it's just the way it is, like somehow it just magically works to where he's like one of the most beautiful people on the planet.
Can I interject briefly?
Of course.
So someone once was like, okay, if there was a spectrum where like on one end was Steve Buscemi and then on the other end it was like, what's that guy? Oh shoot. What's the Adam Driver?
Yeah.
Like who would fall along that spectrum, and I think Adrian Brody might be
in the middle,
in the center.
Yeah, he is in the middle. That's
I agree.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, that makes sense.
Thanks.
Yeah,
that's good.
Thanks for letting me talk
very
through
that. I think that was the first one that I saw in theaters, also.
Oh, okay.
And so it hit me a different way. I liked it. It grabbed me more just because I saw it in the theater.
Yeah, it's a cinematic as hell. I mean, like, it's a beautiful, beautiful thing to watch.
Oh, actually, speaking of Ryan Hunter Mitchell and that movie, I mean, sorry, we were speaking about him earlier. So in Darjeeling Limited, there's that scene where, Owen Wilson's character takes out his tooth, right?
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Then Adrian Brody says, next time, can you say whatever? He says, please forgive this.
Please forgive this, yeah.
So I was talking to Ryan Hunter Mitchell once. Relevant to this podcast, right? Friend of the pod, owner. And he, I was talking to him, and something happened to his tooth. I think it came out, like he had some dental issue, and he said, "Please forgive this." It was perfect.
That's outstanding, and that's like right on par for Ryan.
Right.
If anybody, you know, whoever knows Ryan knows that would be like apropos
for the listeners at home.
For the listeners at home. I had a handful, and I'll just kind of rip through a couple more of the Criterion things that I think people should really check out. It was a great film called The Friends of Eddie Coyle, 1973.
It's cool.
Peter
we
Yates.
Watched that at your place, right?
Yeah. We had a little viewing experience, watched it there, and it's just like it's such a compelling movie, and it's, again, one of those, this is why kind of the Criterion is amazing to me, is like, they find these films that kind of slid through the cracks and are actually like, you look back 30, 40 years later and you're like, oh, this is a freaking masterpiece. You know, like it's truly amazing. The In-Laws, 1979, we talked about Peter Falk and Alan Arkin, one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my life. With good, all of these have like amazing extras too, by the way. And I'll throw into the 70s crop, Two-Lane Blacktop, the Monty Hellman film as well. Yeah, and a great Blu-ray Criterion, all kinds of cool stuff. Another like 80-page booklet. Give me a couple that you got.
So it's funny, I've just been going through these and I realized, so I have my list and then I have my off list, almost list. And my list is actually pretty much all Japanese and French movies. So I might switch some things up here, but there's this movie
that's
called
very on brand for you.
Yeah, I know. So cool. It does sound, I know, it's stupid. There's this movie called Black Sun. It's a I'm actually going to just read the description. So it's, you've probably never seen anything quite like this manic, oddball, anti-buddy picture about a young jazz-obsessed Japanese drifter and a black American GI on the lam in Tokyo. The two outsiders become outlaws, and Kuroyoshi Kurawa depicts their growing bond as an alternatively absurd and tragic culture clash. Black Sun features original music by American jazz drummer Max Roach. This one was awesome. On Hulu like a long time ago, and I watched it when Hulu had like a Criterion channel.
Yeah,
or whatever.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
It's so good and weird.
Oh, awesome. Cool. No, that's a great pick.
Let's see. La Notte. That's Italian, so I lied.
Yeah, no, but that's great.
I was torn between La Notte and Red Desert. Red Desert I've seen in theaters multiple times. It's just a gorgeous movie.
Yeah.
So La Notte is a Michelangelo Antonioni movie. It's part of the trilogy, La Notte, La Ventura,
La Ventura, I actually just rewatched maybe 6 months ago on Criterion. It's insane.
I think I've seen most of them in the theaters, but this one, just that... There's this part near the end where it's him and Jean Monroe, right? Marcello Mastroianni and Jean Monroe.
Yeah.
For most of the movie, and then they go to this party at the end, and it's he's just like his muse Monica Vitti is. It's just the interaction between all of them at this party, and it's very like well orchestrated. I don't know, that movie just stuck with me in a way.
It's an insanely good movie.
All of his movies, I think, are fascinating, where architecture tends to be a character in its own right.
For sure.
That one's great.
And I've got more on Antonioni as we move forward.
Let's see. Another one. This movie, Pale Flower. It's a cool Japanese new wave Yakuza movie.
Yep.
Honestly, the reason I picked this one is because it's one that I... found many moons ago, and when we started doing screenings before we opened, this was one that we did, and people really like caught on to it. It's just a cool noir,
right?
Yakuza movie.
I had two kind of collection things, so sometimes they'll sometimes they'll package. So they've got one called John Cassavetes' Five Films.
Cool.
And I own it. Again, it comes with like an 80-page booklet. It's got an article inside of it where it's Martin Scorsese writing the article, and it's called My Mentor. And it's just about his, you know, Cassavetes' influence on Scorsese and like from Scorsese's perspective, which is amazing. And then the five movies are Shadows, which was his first film, Faces, A Woman Under the Influence, The Killing of a Chinese Bookie, which has been talked about several times on this podcast, and I think Cassavetes' most underrated film, Opening Night, also with a cameo from Seymour Cassell from earlier. That is, if you're a Cassavetes fan at all, or if you want to like really kind of just dive in and kind of understand who this guy is and why he's one of the most important filmmakers in the history of cinema, it's worth the $50 or whatever for the Blu-rays. I think you can get it on Amazon truly for like $50 or so, which works out to be like $10 a Blu-ray, which is pretty great.
It's not a bad deal.
Plus all the extras. There's like every DVD has like interviews with Cassavetes and Jenna Rollins and, you know, Ben Gazzara, other stars of the film, and other historians and things like that, adding perspective. But the second collection is called Rossellini and Bergman. And it was the three films that they did together in Italy in the early 50s. One was Stromboli. The other one is Europe 1951. Yeah, 51. And then my personal favorite, Journey to Italy, which came out in 1952. It's got like an 80-90 page booklet that goes with it. And all these amazing, like never before produced photos of Bergman on set and... different perspectives from other filmmakers and everything else, and documentaries that are part of it. It's a really cool little three movie collection of stuff. Like, if you're a Rossellini fan, if you're an Ingrid Bergman fan, you probably maybe seen one or two here or there, but it's like, you know, just a beautiful little collection. Comes in a hard box. It's great.
It's a hard box.
Yeah, just like the Cassavetes.
Sorry.
Well, you know how those, like, used to get, like, collections, and it's, like, four movies on one disc, which is, like, a nightmare, you know? Or they're, like, like the wide screens on one side, like, you know, just those kind
of
nightmares.
We still get those
issues.
for some of the screenings we're doing, and I'm always like, which side is which?
Yeah,
I always
awful.
Forget which one right. is the.
That's
yeah.
whatever's facing up.
Okay.
But for all you kids,
what color
there.
Is the box? That's the most important question.
It's yellow, bright yellow for the Rossellini and Bergman. It's actually beautiful.
Nice.
And. But anyway,
good
like
for spring.
You know, it's like truly like this nice little collection.
Yeah.
What do you got collection wise?
Well, actually, Tampopo is on my list.
Oh,
have
okay.
you seen Tampopo?
Yeah. In fact, I saw it at Suns.
Oh, good.
Oh, look at that.
We
I
haven't
think so.
Officially shown it there, but.
But maybe we
moving
watched
on.
It. Or, oh, or is it right now? Okay.
But you've seen it,
but
or
why?
Maybe in the background or something.
Maybe that's what it was. Anyway,
it's like the
to,
Rocky of.
I'm gonna tell HR.
HR. It's it's like the Rocky of ramen movies, right?
Yeah.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
Where did I watch it? Okay, anyway, so that's in the
Criterion Collection.
Yeah,
well. But yeah, it's like this guy training this woman to make the best ramen, and it's like weirdly erotic and funny. There's a lot of weird fight scenes. And
yeah.
It's like the Rocky of ramen movies.
I like it. Yeah, that's a fun one. A great way to put it.
So there's one of these collections I want to come back to, but I'll go over a few other ones. So, David Cronenberg's The Brood.
Mm-hmm.
I was torn between that and Scanners. Scanners is more well known. The Brood is a little bit earlier. It's about this like disturbed woman receiving a radical form of psychotherapy and this like remote institute, and starts borning these demon baby things.
Ooh.
It's pretty cool.
It's very heady and
it's very
dark
and obviously. Campy
yeah.
also.
Yeah. But that, like it doesn't, you know, you enjoy it. It's not like this slog that you're
right.
trying to get through. Like it's fun.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
And it's cool.
When did it come out?
Cronenberg body horror. 79.
Oh, wow.
And then, so one of the collections is the, two films by Chris Marker, La Jetée and Saint Soleil.
Yeah, La Jetée.
We showed both of those in the past. I don't know. La Jetée is the movie that inspired 12 Monkeys.
Mm-hmm.
It's all still photography. It's about a dystopian future, like a dream of a dystopian future. And it's only like 24 to 30 minutes long.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Saint Soleil is this real like... heady. It's a narrative. It's like all this different footage from when he was in Japan, the director, Chris Marker.
Mm-hmm.
And it is over it is just all of this narration of these letters that were written back and forth. And I don't know if the letters are actually real or not, but it's
right.
just a lot of really cool images. Actually, Brittany came in during this movie one time.
It was just manifest. Oh, yeah.
And Andrew Bucket came in.
All right.
Oh,
friend
were
of the
we
podcast.
Eating soup?
Andrew Bucket came from his soup class. So this is like this real quiet, heady movie. And Bucket comes in with his fucking soup bag. And he
like
can't.
Bag of
soup. He's drunk. And it's like 8 o'clock on a Sunday. And he's got the bag of soup that, and he can't sit still, and he just keeps moving around and picking up and putting down the very
the
loud bag
it's
of
the most rustling
soup.
Bag.
And I remember
I wasn't really helping.
Brittany
I guess.
Actually texted me at one point, and she's like, "He's making me so anxious," and I was like, "He's making you anxious." If you've been to Sons, there's a church pew. There's a church pew that you know you can sit like 3 or 4 people on, and it has you know the just the arm on the side of it, and. You know, then there's the walkway.
Right, the aisle.
The aisle, thank you.
Yeah.
Basic yes. words.
And Bucket, if you're listening to this, I do love you very much.
I love you
oh,
too,
no,
Bucket.
We all love you.
But, yeah. I was
there was a point
anxious.
Where he was sitting on the side of the church pew, just sort of like facing into the aisle, facing the side with like his head down.
All these containers of soup. So that when you were just describing this film, like the images of it kind of started like what's the word like
meld
materializing.
With the
yeah. And then I thought it was
started getting anxiety.
I thought
again.
Of like a manila brown paper bag. Yeah. Or okay.
You got any more before I go to my honorable mentions? Which could
I do
just
have
as easily
two,
be
so
on the
this
list.
Movie Tuki Buki from Senegal that we showed. It's kind of like a French New Wave movie that I just thought like the soundscape. The images, very cool. It's part of that Martin Scorsese world cinema
oh, right,
stuff.
Right. Which is the whole Criterion thing, by the way.
Yeah, which in itself is also amazing.
For sure.
That one, I have I have one that I kind of wanted to go into. We can come back to because it's comedy, and I kind of wanted to maybe have that go into the next segment. But also another movie that Brittany has seen at Sons, that you have seen at Sons, didn't know that you were going to see in his house.
Oh my God.
So there are two different movies called House. One is this Japanese psychedelic ghost tale, a stream of conscious bedtime story, an episode of Scooby-Doo as directed by Mario Bava, is how it's described here.
That's pretty.
Oh, that's funny because I was just going to think of how to describe it, and Scooby-Doo does come to mind.
Right? But it is a weird, trippy, psychosexual movie that's so funny. However, a few people, when we showed it last time, thought we were showing another movie.
One of those people was me.
One of those people was Jason.
Oh, that's funny.
And I was talking to a friend of yours beforehand and saying, oh, that's funny, da-da-da. And you and I were talking. Actually, I was talking to you about it beforehand. Like, oh, I think some people think that it's a different house. And you were just like, oh, that's funny. And then it wasn't until later that you realized, oh, I'm one of those people.
Right. I'm in that crew.
Yeah. You made it halfway through this movie.
It was a bit much. I will, yeah. Oh,
I think it made me so feel nuts. Both tickled and disturbed for a day or so.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
as it should.
I'm into it.
Yeah.
I understand, though. It's pretty out there.
Yeah, and I almost never, and I truly maybe less than a handful of times in my life, like left before a movie's over.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And
it
was just like, one of those things where I'm like, not tonight. I can't do this.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's definitely a... Yeah, yeah.
Like,
if you weren't expecting
it... At intermission, I was like, all right, I'm out.
Yeah, that's true. I think some people enjoyed it, given how different it was.
Oh, I was there with Eric Lofton, friend of the podcast, and he absolutely loved it, like texted me for days about how good it was.
It definitely is one of those where, you know, it works or it doesn't.
Yeah. I had a couple honorable mentions.
I'll do some
things,
of mine after yours.
I think... Or totally, I'll run through them very quickly, and then I've got a wish list for Criterion because I know they're listening to this podcast. They've emailed us before.
Hashtag
Criterion. F is for Fake, 1973, Orson Welles and Gary Graver film. So much fun, like a super great Criterion as well. Repo Man, 84,
so
Alex Cox film. If you haven't seen it, please see that. It's a great Harry Dean Stanton film as well. The Red Shoes, the Criterion collection, is a 1948 Powell Pressburger film. Amazing, amazing film in its own right, but the Criterion's especially lovely. And talk about packaging, Stanley Kubrick's 1956 little-known masterpiece called The Killing.
Killing's good. I almost put Sterling Hayden. Paths of Glory on mine.
Yeah, it's pretty great, too.
So good.
But that's my honorable mention, and then I've got a whole wish list that I want to shout out to these guys to make into Criterion.
So my wish list, or sorry, not wish list, some of my honorable mentions were Persona, Ingmar Bergman.
Yeah, for sure.
And it's so good. It's just like the most experimental Bergman movie, but still beautiful and in his own and like profound.
It's one of the like 25 most original films ever
that's
made.
So good. Ron, there was like some more obvious ones. Ron is a Kurosawa movie that's based on King Lear. It's just perfect. That's so good. Fantastic Planet, just because something animated in there. It's the Czech French animated psychedelic movie from
beautiful too. Yeah.
About blue people, about the Ohms. The Scarlet Empress, which we just showed, which we can talk about also.
Mm-hmm.
I guess not. It was last month.
But
a Marlene Dietrich movie that I saw in Chicago and was in love with it. And then we showed it last Sunday and people loved it as well. And that was, I was like kind of nervous. I was like, I wonder if this is just like, it was an experience that I had.
Right. But you felt
justified.
It's
so funny. Yeah. And it was like, everyone was in love with like the set design and just like the atmosphere of it. And it's like really funny and kind of ahead of its time, given the context. Anyways, that one and this movie, The Naked Island by Kenito Shindo.
Oh, I don't know that.
It is a documentary-like dialogue-free portrayal of daily struggle. It's a work of stunning beauty and invention. It's a Japanese movie from the same guy that did Onibaba and Kuroneko.
Oh, okay.
I saw that one at BAM and what's his name? Benicio del Toro helped present the movie.
He
was there, and it was like a really beautiful film. It's a hard one to get through. There's like no dialogue, and it's over an hour and a half. But it's,
wow.
So that one. And then your wish list?
Yeah, so I just like was comedy. Making this up this morning of like the movies that I wish had a Criterion because of a couple of things. One, they're just like they'd be ideal for Criterion, and you and I have talked about some of these things where it's like, why is that not on the Criterion list? And I'm sure Criterion has, you know, plotted out the course for the next 10 years of what they're going to, you know, release and when, and getting the rights to these movies and all. So all these things kind of come in time, and there's a bigger picture, I'm sure, behind all of it. But for me, it was just like, these are hard to find on Blu-ray, or I think they're just great movies and like deserve a Criterion piece. But the first one was Wild at Heart, the David Lynch film from 1990, won the Palme d'Or at Cannes, and is one of the greatest Nicolas Cage performances of all time. True. And I had on there as well, we were talking about Antonioni earlier, Zabriskie Point, which you cannot find on Blu-ray anywhere. And it would, so I definitely want it to be kind of available on Blu-ray, and Criterion would be a perfect way to see it. And they've already done a bunch of his movies, so do Zabriskie Point, please, folks at Criterion. El Topo was an easy one, the Jodorowsky film, which is a favorite of Ryan Hunter Mitchell's, 1970 classic, should be in there. Another one, Sam Peckinpah film from 1974 called Bring Me the Head of Alfredo Garcia.
Interesting.
Insanely hard to find on Blu-ray. If you find it, it's like $60, you know, even on like Amazon. And then I had, the last movie I had was a film I champion all the time to people. It's a very, which is even weird to say, but a very little known Dustin Hoffman film from 1978 called Straight Time.
Okay.
Which is based off of an Eddie Bunker short story about just kind of life on parole in the 70s in Los Angeles. Like a great L.A. movie of that time period as well. And Hoffman is like at peak Hoffman, you know, like the 70s Dustin Hoffman's like so good. So it's just a great movie. And kind of when you look at it as a work of art, you're like, how is this not a Criterion? Same thing. Can't find it on Blu-ray anywhere.
Interesting.
What's low Hoffman? If that's his peak.
Low Hoffman's probably anything like...
He's trying to stir drama.
No, no, that's fine. I mean, that's worth like discussing. I mean, he's so freaking good, but like he's done his share, like De Niro, of just like crap, you know, kind of junky studio movies. Although I loved him in Meet the Fockers. Like he's the bright shining point of that movie. Like he's the best thing about it.
Maybe it's...
I don't
no
know,
Valley.
Mr. What is it? Mr. Magorium's Wonder Emporium. That's probably
is he
a
in
low
that?
Point.
Oh, that
is
children,
it?
Like
yeah,
that family.
The Natalie family Portman thing, right? That's him and Natalie Portman. So that's probably a low point. But like 70s Hoffman's, like 70s Pacino and 70s De Niro. Like those three guys were like, you know, the stalwarts of that decade.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's my wish list.
Have my wish list is not as extensive. I only could come up with two. The Mirror, which is a Tarkovsky, Andrei Tarkovsky
one
movie.
One of my favorite movies.
And there's a bunch of Andrei Tarkovsky stuff in the Criterion Collection, but this one is, that one stuck out to me the most, for sure.
Right.
And then The Circus, which is a Charlie Chaplin movie is oddly not...
They have everything else,
they have everything else, but it's not, they don't have like a DVD or a Blu-ray of it, so.
No, those are two good ones.
So they fucked up big time.
Well,
shall we talk about comedy and
April? Man, I mean, like, this is such a fun month. I'll be at the cinema tonight, actually.
What's on tonight?
To Be or Not to Be.
To Be or Not to Be.
Jack Benny and Carol Lombard. It's Ernst Lubitsch, right?
It's Lubitsch.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny. Cool. In Sullivan's Travels, they mention Lubitsch a lot.
Oh, I can imagine, yeah.
When she's like, do you know any directors like Lubitsch? I keep mentioning Lubitsch.
For the listeners at home, if you've ever fantasized being at NYU partying, trying to catch up.
That's what it's like right now.
Dreaming vicariously.
Like a nerd fest. Yeah.
Brittany, what is comedy?
Oh, I don't know. I'm actually excited about this calendar. And got like I have maybe seen a quarter of it.
Which is probably more than most months, right?
Yeah. Yeah, actually. I have a pretty pedestrian experience with it. I don't know. Or, like, you know, or just read IMDb's. But, okay, I'm actually interested in this list because I feel like also it includes a lot of movies that people freak out when I say that I haven't seen it. Does that make sense?
No, of course, yeah.
Sure.
But give us a couple examples of those.
Okay, yeah. I'll talk about the ones that I've seen later. So, let's see. Shaun of the Dead, I have not seen.
Oh, my God.
But, yeah, right? Everyone's like, <"Whoa."> So, Shaun of
it's
the Dead.
It's so much fun. Yeah.
Yeah. And then,
Saturday night, by the way.
Saturday.
I won't be here. But I think maybe I can access it in New York. So
I'll send you like a video of it.
Airplane. I've seen another one of those, but I have not seen Airplane. So I get
Naked
the
Gun.
Naked. I've seen Naked Gun.
Yeah.
Then you've kind of seen Airplane.
Half Baked. I have not seen.
Yeah. Half Baked. Really?
No.
Oh, Half Baked. So silly.
Yeah. It's
although
silly.
We showed it last time, and everyone got high, and it was.
It wasn't as fun
because everyone was too fucking high.
Oh.
It wasn't.
And it's on the
20th. Just quiet.
Yeah,
like, on brand. Actually, and then
did that on 420 on purpose.
So the ones that I've seen and I like particularly like. I haven't seen. Actually, I have not seen Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. I like The Odd Couple.
Mostly funny.
Yeah, classic. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
A lot of it else is on here. Oh.
I think the 11th you would like the.
The 11th. Lazy. Oh, you mean Young Frankenstein or Lazy
Young Frankenstein?
Okay.
Young Frankenstein.
Yeah, I've seen. I really like Gene Wilder too. I've only seen snippets of Young Frankenstein, so.
But you're a huge Mel Brooks fan as well.
I love Mel Brooks. Yes.
Then yeah, you got
to. The goal was to have at least one Mel Brooks movie on there.
For sure.
Spaceballs was almost on there, but.
Oh, okay.
I think this one is.
No, you'll.
Spaceballs
love
hack. I'm gonna put it out there. Actually, I haven't seen it, but okay. but I think that okay. What else? I've seen and really. Enjoy What We Do in the Shadows.
Yeah.
And I have this crazy experience with What We Do in the Shadows because I watched it like with like a Tinder date, like we watched it on his couch.
Hmm.
And then just by coincidence, the you following week, you know Rhys Darby, who plays like Murray and
of course.
Flight of the Conchords.
Yeah, yeah. He's amazing.
He's a werewolf in.
He's the head of the werewolves, yeah.
Yeah, the alpha wolf. I was just like hanging out with comics who were opening for him in Virginia. And so then I just hung out with Rhys Darby in this bar and I got to look really cool because I took a picture of us and I sent it to this guy who like that fizzled quickly, but I did get to show, hey, remember that movie we watched last week?
Wow, that's awesome.
I did win because
that's
I got big, to hang out.
That's a big move, yeah.
So anyway,
Told him you never wanted to see him again.
right. So yeah, that I thought that was so funny and so interesting. I really love Birdcage.
Yeah.
Birdcage
is fun.
There'll be a drag show for that one as well.
Oh, really? That sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Dr. Strangelove, I saw in like in senior year of high school for like a contemporary politics class.
Oh.
And I think I'd really enjoy watching it later on, you know, as an adult on
sure.
my own terms, I think.
It's still so funny
yeah.
and smart.
What else? I think that's it for what I've seen. I've seen Mean Girls.
Mean Girls. What about Bob?
What about
no.
Bob?
No. What is that?
Bill Murray.
Bill Murray.
Oh, really? When did it come out?
Early 90s, yeah. 91, 2.
Early 90s.
Yeah.
Not important.
Cool.
He's
seems
amazing,
like a dynamic calendar.
Stir Crazy is Gene Wilder and
Richard Pryor.
Where is that? Oh, really? I feel like I've heard of this one. Okay, nice. So that's also...
Dumb and Dumber you've never seen?
You know what? I just saw it when I was a kid, but I never really...
Like, didn't,
yeah. I never really like... What do you call it? Like, it didn't really resonate with me as a kid. And then I didn't kind of catch up to its, like cult following that built later.
Cultural relevance.
Right, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
But I did. I did see it. I feel like I saw it with, like I didn't grow up in the U.S., but then that was one of the movies that I watched with my cousins.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Japan.
Oh, okay. Good place to grow up.
Yeah, lots of interesting movies, including House, which came out of there. But like, so stuff like Dumb and Dumber, I specifically remember like watching with my cousins or something, and you know,
right.
I wonder if it's still funny even at all. But
maybe.
I think it'll be fun to be in a room full of people who 90% of probably have this nostalgic memory of it.
There is a scene in that movie, and I probably haven't seen it in 15 years. But I would say there's at least once every few months, I'll be walking down the street doing something random, doesn't matter, taking a shower. And I remember the scene where they're in those like orange and blue tuxedos, right? They go to the big event for the owls or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And there's just a quick little moment, and they don't make a big deal of it, but Jim Carrey smacks Jeff Daniels in the back, or is it the other way around? But one of the two like smacks the other with the cane like behind the knees, and he just goes down. And it's like, and they like pan away from it as it's happening, and it's just like such a beautiful little moment that is like the funniest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
You know, I never really, my beef here, my take is I never got into the Jim Carrey comedies that really shaped him.
Right.
Does that make sense? Sure. Like
those mid-90s comedies.
Yeah, because I mean, it's not like I didn't have access to some American films over there, but like I think my relationship with like the Ace Ventura Chronicles are similar to my relationship with Dumb and Dumber, where I feel like I saw it, but I didn't really get it.
Sure.
But then The Mask, I really remember watching because I was scared of it, and it made me cry. And my dad was like, oh, we don't have to watch this. So anyway, whatever. Jim Carrey, great comedic actor. I feel like I never related to his legacy, but he's still alive. Also, I'm open to it.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Well, now he's on some other level.
He's on another level. He's like painting, right?
He's painting and he's like all zen. And
no, he's doing transcendental meditation, which I do as well. But he is.
Oh, really?
He's like, yeah, he's kind of gone over the hill.
I can't tell. I don't know how much I buy it.
Like the trajectory.
No, I agree.
I
think he's just, yeah, there's. I don't know.
I did like that interview with him, or like where he's on the red carpet and the woman's asking him a question. He's like, this does not matter. Like, this is meaningless. And she's like, well, come on. He's like,
I'm not playing
along.
He's just
not there. It's great.
Can we
talk about Fail University?
Sure. I'm very eager to. Yes.
Yeah. So Fail University is a show that we've been doing at Suns that Brittany and some others helped start.
How did that come about?
Great question. So I launched it initially with two comedians, Pearl Rose and Naomi Caravani, and each of us have nerdy background. I was starting stand-up comedy as I was finished on the tail end of my graduate program. Naomi taught history. Pearl was really also interested in the idea of creating a show that was a live sort of satirical show framed like an academic symposium where each month five or so comedians present on the subject at hand, like a sort of academic presentation. And the idea is that it satirizes academic culture. So Fail University, FU, that's FALE. And the logo, as Pearl Rose expertly sort of based off of the Yale logo, like has the outline of a phallic member. I don't know what I'm allowed to say here, but
anything
you can.
Cool. Okay.
We found out a few episodes in that we could cuss. We were like, "Fuck!"
Oh, that reminds me of that. What's that Wes Anderson, the animated, the Fox one, where they say cuss?
Fantastic, Mr. Fox.
Anyway, cuss. It's just cute. Let me think. So it actually ran for about 2 years. We launched it, I remember, in like June of 2016, and
not long after we opened.
Right, and I think that the first show was about art history, because we thought that was sort of had like a proper kind of Tweety stuffy stigma surrounding it, so allowed us to play with that. And we went through just different subjects. We didn't even repeated some. Obviously, we did like American history, economics. We did weaker ones was finance.
And these are done
physics,
like you guys are doing
physics,
PowerPoints backing
PowerPoint,
you up
yes,
kind
yes,
of thing.
Yes.
Yeah,
PowerPoint
this is great.
Presentation. So
Go ahead.
The idea is that then, so the host, like, whoever was hosting among the team of Fail faculty, we would sort of do an intro together and welcome everyone and invite them into our learning space. And then stand-up comedians would go on. And then I think it's fun for comics also to branch out of their general, their own sort of joke head and world and approach a different kind of writing exercise. So it's a fun opportunity for comedians. It was we were kind of blown away because it picked up an audience and we were selling out for a while.
Yeah, and there's a lot of repeat folks,
like people who came and
continued.
Just became fans.
Somebody gave Naomi a diploma that she had made for us. So
really,
yeah,
that's cool.
And my favorite actually might have been, this was kind of out there, this is when we were starting to scrape at the bottom of the barrel for ideas, but I liked our zoology one. That one was just wacky, but it was about that one really took a kind of absurdist turn. I don't know if you remember.
Is that the one that Landon did the pizza thing? Jesus Christ.
Yeah, so people got really thematically creative with that animal themed show. We were dressed up as, I guess, zoo faculty. Am I missing something?
No. Sorry, I just heard a blip in the
me
in
too
the, in the can.
Someone. I thought the whole story with the show is that then honestly, it kind of hit a sudden hiatus because a very beloved comedian in the DC scene died last May. Yeah. And it was on the night that the show was supposed to happen. It was supposed to be about revolutions, and the comics had worked really hard. And he was on it, I believe. So somehow it just knocked like the energy out of the show and us. So it's been about a year, and I will not be here for this particular one that's coming up, but Naomi is bringing it back. She's going to bring back that particular show, Revolutions. It's going to happen on the 27th, and which is just after What We Do in the Shadows, so a night of good shit.
A night of good shit.
Revolutionary good shit. And I really recommend it. It'll have a really, really funny lineup.
Yeah, definitely.
Brittany has moved to New York, but maybe you'll be on the next one.
We'll figure it out. That's the idea. I was going to be, and then I realized that I'll be in Boston. So after I had made sure that I would be on this one. So I look forward to coming back for it. And also our hope is to bring it to New York as well, to expand the Phil University
at the
satellite
Suns that we're opening
campus
up there.
Empire. Oh, yeah, right.
Just kidding.
Thank you so much for the space. I feel like we stressed out David a lot.
Nope. That never happened.
Okay, yeah.
Never.
Yeah, thank you for your cooperation.
It was a really cool if you've never been to Fail University, you should check it out. It's a brilliant idea of a show. It's a very unique show, and it's very funny and smart.
Mostly an excuse for me to like look like sort of like a slutty version of a baddie Marxist professor from the 70s, you know.
Yeah.
Which is
that too.
My personal aesthetic fantasy. So
I did have one other criterion thing that I wanted to bring in. So there's a collection of films by this guy Pierre Ité. He's a French comedy master. Whose stuff like was unseen for decades, and he did a bunch of silent stuff in the same vein as like Charlie Chaplin or Jacques Tati, and I would just highly recommend. We're showing one of those movies. The reason that I waited from earlier is we're showing one of the movies Yo-Yo in the month of April.
The 23rd.
It's about a clown. That's all I got on that. But
no, that's great.
It's very funny. And like I was curious, Brittany, real quick, I guess we should probably wrap up, huh?
We will in just a sec.
Your thoughts on silent comedy, because to me like, you know, movies initially everything was about showing, right? It was about actually using the medium of the visual, and to me it's still very fascinating to watch, you know, comedies where you're not relying on dialogue and you have to really think about the way something is seen or perceived visually. Do you think about that when you're doing comedy?
Here's my thinking about that, actually, because for silent films, what was the comedic timing about, like facial expression and when the text would go on the screen, you know what I mean, when or like the sort of quotes of the jokes. So I think like it's really interesting because...
Or physical comedy.
Physical comedy, right? Like Chaplin sort of thing. And I think what I didn't think about is that obviously then the arrival of sound with films, I think, like changed the dimension of comedic timing in a movie, right?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
So I'm curious now, I wonder, has anybody revisited that silent comedy model? Like you guys are the buffs. Has that happened recently?
What was the artist... But it wasn't really
the black and white one.
Oh, the artist,
did come out recently.
The Farthest.
Was that a comedy?
I'm sure it had
a comedy drama. Yeah.
I feel like there's a market for some sketch writing.
You're gonna do it.
Inspired
by this show.
Thanks for outing my secret idea that I was going to pitch to Kevin Hart's executive team. but I think that would be a really interesting experiment. Comedic experiment.
Yeah.
Especially, and my last point here is like, I think with the advent of different kinds of stand-up and like the way that comedic films have gone, and people often, I feel like now this like cerebral brand of comedy is becoming the more like zeitgeist. I think like a focus on physical comedy would be interesting and different. And for the past decade or so, comedy has been moving away from pure slapstick.
Yeah.
Maybe there's a space for that. Bring back banana peels.
Bring back banana. Yeah. Just start carrying them with you.
Yeah, rubber chickens.
Start like a vine. Oh, I guess vine's gone. Never mind.
Maybe I'll just do my stand-up comedy without talking.
Yeah.
And see where that goes.
Real quick before we're going to have to get out of here because Jamal's like ready for us to go. And we should. What's next for you real quick?
Me? Oh, yeah. Sure. Yeah. Oh, actually, tomorrow I am at the Beer Baron Comedy Loft in DuPont Circle. Nice. Around 8 o'clock. It's a story collider. It's a storytelling show, actually. So I'll be telling a science-y, it's like a science-themed show. So I'm doing that. Then I'll be in New York for about, again, for about a month or so, but I'll be back for shows in May. And I often post about my shows, for example, on my website, which is brittanycarneycomedy.com. And,
perfect.
Yeah.
What is your Instagram?
My Instagram? Yeah, I post more actively about shows on there, and I come to D.C. a lot. So it's Brittany, B-R-I-T-T-A-N-Y, _ U-N-K-O, Unko, _ Carney, C-A-R-N-E-Y.
Yeah, shorten
and
that shit.
I know, I should. Especially because Unko means, so Unko means like poo in Japanese, not shit, but like poo. And some, you know, a Japanese-American comic in New York was like, hey, who didn't know of my tie to Japan was like, do you know, is that your middle name? We're like, what
right.
is that?
Poo.
So anyway, yeah, I'm at the Kennedy Center in September. But
awesome.
September 20th. But I'm going to be back for shows before then. So anyway.
Good.
Yeah, thanks.
Brittany, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks so much for coming. We'll let the Kinks play us out.
Yeah.
Jamal?
Scene from Darjeeling.
Yeah.
Limited.
So good.
Spaceship somewhere.